Welcome to the Home Business Podcast with Richard Captain Henderson, publisher of Home Business Magazine, and Sherilyn Colleen, managing editor. This how-to show helps you successfully operate your home-based business.
Greetings and welcome to the Home Business Podcast. I'm Richard Captain Henderson, your skipper at Home Business TV.
And I'm Sherilyn Colleen, your co-host.
Let's secure for sea and get underway. We've heard the term entrepreneur, mompreneur, and worldpreneur. Now, how about vagipreneur?
Yes, dubbed the first vagipreneur, Rachel Braun Sherrill is on a journey to find out how companies can profit from the coming surge in women's sexual health and wellness.
Rachel sure has a fascinating business startup story to share with our listeners today and is a leader and speaker in women's entrepreneurship. She also has her debut book, Orgasmic Leadership, Profiting from the Coming Surge in Women's Sexual Health and Wellness.
Rachel's learned early on in her vagipreneurial journey that once she made this proclamation and declared her role in the societal battle, it could get downright crazy. Every man and, in her case, woman for herself.
So, greetings, Rachel Sherr. Welcome to the Home Business Podcast. Say hello to our podcast audience.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be here.
Thanks for coming on our show.
Where are you connecting in from today?
New York City. It's a little steamy.
Ooh, good deal.
So, Rachel, you are an entrepreneur, or rather vagipreneur, in the area of women's sexual health and wellness. Talk a little about this fascinating business startup opportunity.
So, when you look at big opportunities, they generally start with, is there a better, different, less expensive, more efficient, easier way to solve problems? And many of the people starting businesses in this space, which I refer to as women's sexual and reproductive health. So think menstruation, fertility, infertility, incontinence, pregnancy, a wide range of topics, arousal, desire, and satisfaction, that there are huge numbers of women who are experiencing problems or symptoms that they don't currently have solutions for. So for instance, 43% of women at some point in their lives have sexual concerns and difficulties. Compare that to the 31% of men who suffer from erectile dysfunction, and you know that's a multi-billion dollar business, and female sexual health and wellness has a huge opportunity and a big hill to climb. The people who are creating those products and services to meet those needs are really going to capitalize.
Well, I'll tell you, even if you just look at the volume of commercials out there, if that's any marker on what you're talking about with the statistics there. You know, they say a lot about, you know, study the statistics first. So you find just some basic raw data like that shows there's a good opportunity there.
There's a huge opportunity, and you mentioned the commercials. Many female sexual health companies and reproductive health companies are limited in terms of their access to those same outlets that are proclaiming these messages about male sexual health. All over the place. So there are many companies in this category who to this day, I discovered this in 2010, but 8 years later, still can't advertise on Facebook because it's considered a violation of their standards and practices, even if you're delivering a message about a clinically proven product that could help women in one aspect of their life.
So it's not necessarily a cultural thing, and there's some taboo to get through. There's also, you know, legal and structural roadblocks to getting that message out.
And I think they're both. I think they go hand in hand. I think the cultural, religious, societal discomfort with women's sexuality and all its complex glory inhibits some of those other decision makers from saying, you know, this is a message, this is a product that people could use, that's safe and effective, that's worth sharing. So I don't think you can separate sort of the legal business roadblocks to what is the basic discomfort that we have. Certainly in America, historically, with female arousal, desire, satisfaction, sexuality.
Hmm. Well, Rachel, this business category ties in with your title-popping book, Orgasmic Leadership, Profiting from the Coming Surge in Women's Health and Wellness. How, you know, getting into the nuts and bolts, how can an entrepreneur actually profit from this surge?
In any business, what you want to be doing is, as I said earlier, providing a better, different, differentiated, meaningful solution to a problem. Most of the people in this space have done is they found a problem that they had, that they suffered from, that they didn't see an available or satisfactory solution for, they create a solution, and then from there they build a business. So, for instance, there are women who have had tremendous issues with incontinence. There are 60 million women who have symptoms of incontinence. Again, a huge, huge opportunity. It's not that there aren't companies looking at that space right now. There's always medical device companies, and there have been pads and those kinds of things. But what people are looking at now who are talking about incontinence is there a way to basically strengthen the pelvic floor muscles? So regardless of whether I'm suffering from these symptoms because I've just had a baby or because I have declining estrogen levels because I'm aging, is there one solution that I could use to solve these problems? A woman just built a business. A woman by the name of Wendy Starr started a business because she was finding that she was having allergic reactions or chemical reactions to the ingredients in lubricants that she could buy off the shelf. So she created one that was chemical-free, that was irritant-free, and again, solved a personal problem and built a business. You name a body part, you name a system in the female sexual response, and there are products that can help provide better solutions to these problems.
So you don't necessarily have to be a chemist or a product manufacturer. You have to be an entrepreneur and recognize the opportunity and then find out who you need to work with to help you develop a good product to meet that, you know, to meet that market demand.
100%. You don't necessarily have to be a coder. You don't have to be a chemist. What you do have to do is have an incredible amount of endurance to identify how you can find a solution, build a solution, manufacture a solution, and sell it in a way that you can generate profits and an ongoing business. So there are all different ways to enter this.
You know what they say a lot about being an entrepreneur, it's about being able to see all of the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle and then figure out how to fit them all together, being the one to work through all the boundaries and interfaces.
And also really understanding, to me, a sign of intelligence that I always look at when I'm speaking with people is, do they know what they know and do they know what they don't know? Because sometimes it's just as important as an entrepreneur to know where you don't have skills so that you can build a team that can support you as you try to move forward. But I do think if I were to say that there's a couple of characteristics that really define successful entrepreneurs, one is an unbelievable drive, an enormous amount of physical, emotional, and intellectual energy, and a vision. Now, the vision might, the steps you take to get to the vision might change, but you ultimately are working towards something that is big and meaningful and important to at least a target group. So I always say that in a business that doesn't sell anything is really a very expensive hobby. Ultimately, you're in business to sell the product, to solve problems in a different and better way.
Now, I'll tell you, some of my businesses in the past have been good hobbies, I guess.
good expensive hobbies.
Right. Before moving on to our next topic, I'd like to highlight this show's sponsor, Deborah Kay of Global Venture Services. Deborah Kay is one of the network marketing industry's top executives. She has worked with hundreds of aspiring home-based entrepreneurs to achieve home business success. She has a simple formula that you can follow. For more information, visit www.workparttimelivefulltime.com or our podcast webpage for more information on sponsors.
So let's talk a little more about what this term means, orgasmic leadership. What types of companies are leading the way in orgasmic leadership?
So there are so many different companies, and I just want to provide a little context. Historically, companies that have provided services and products to women tend to think of them as body parts or conditions. So you're a menstruating woman, you're a woman who's trying to get pregnant, you're a woman who can't get pregnant, you're a woman who's looking for birth control, you're a woman who's suffering from incontinence symptoms, you're a woman who's having issues with desire or arousal, whatever the case may be. What the orgasmic leaders are doing is looking, in my mind, at the totality of a woman's experience and trying to find multiple places that they could improve and interact in her life. So going back to the incontinence example, historically the conversation always was about reducing the number of leaks you had or the number of pads you had to wear. Now there are a number of people in this space, orgasmic leaders, I would say, who are talking not only about that, but what happens when you reduce those symptoms? What happens when you strengthen the pelvic floor muscles? Are there benefits in intimacy and connection and quality of life? So taking those same symptoms and connecting them in the context of her bigger life. So for instance, we've heard stories working with incontinence businesses that people have had to stop their jobs. If you're a teacher, you don't have the opportunity to run out of a classroom and leave young kids in there every time. If you had a real solution to reduce those symptoms, it really does change your quality of life. So it's really looking not just at one small problem, but looking at it in the context of her life. There are many orgasmic leaders and companies that are demonstrating orgasmic leadership working in the menstrual hygiene space. And that could mean any of a number of different things. It could mean they're using different, more natural ingredients because they are part of this effort to say that women should know what goes in their bodies. It could be part of the companies that are doing different distribution models where you get to select the products that you need and they get delivered to your door privately every day, every month, so that you're not, you know, running out in the middle of the night. But again, it's in the context of understanding how women experience these symptoms or these problems and how they might look for solutions and how comfortable they will be using them.
Okay, and the place that I'm gets back to that jigsaw puzzle, being able to fit them all together. So, you know, being successful in business requires that the entrepreneur also be a problem solver. Rachel, you know, what problems are these companies solving in to prosper in women's health? I think you mentioned one already, the strengthening pelvic muscles and some of the examples that you used.
So I would say they're solving problems or creating situations where women can have fuller lives. So that either means that the things that they're experiencing aren't interfering physically or they feel different about them emotionally. So they're solving problems like better access, more choices, safer, more natural ingredients for menstrual products. They're solving problems about how do I track my cycle so that I increase the length of time that I am fertile if I, in fact, am trying to get pregnant. They're talking about different opportunities to improve arousal, desire, and satisfaction for women in whatever stage they are in their sexual journey. And I just want to talk about that one for a minute because when you talk about satisfaction, those are always the areas that make most people uncomfortable. And the way we describe it is that female sexual response is really like a bus ride. Some women don't want to get on the bus. That's lack of desire. Some women, when they get on the bus, they don't enjoy the ride. It's boring. It's bumpy. They've been there before. That's lack of arousal. And some women never get to their ultimate destination, which is lack of orgasm. And for any woman who's experienced that, if those things aren't happening, if that bus ride isn't enjoyable, she's not racing back to get on the bus the next time. So that's an example of looking at a journey as opposed to my desire is lower. How can we fix that? It has to do with having a broader understanding of all the systems that are in play in a woman's sexual response, physiological, psychological, emotional, behavioral, contextual. These are big, complicated things, and women are complicated creatures physically and emotionally. So there are many, many creative ways where, as I said, you can interact with a situation she might be having and make a difference and offer a better solution.
Yeah, I like your analogies, the way you're pulling this all together to see the big picture and how all the parts interact. I mean, a lot of times in the startup discussions, we don't see that element of it. It's kind of taking one opportunity at a time. But the way you're pulling it all together here can have a great benefit in any business you're starting up.
And I think one of the opportunities I have to do that is because I go into companies and I help them figure out how to do this. So I take a 10,000 foot view, and then I also get into the details with them to figure out how to run and build a business. But there are so many companies in this space being created every day, trying to get funded every day, some successfully, that you still do, even though this is a wide open playing field, I think, and leaders haven't yet risen to the top of the pile, you still are subject to the same requirements that you have to be offering something. As you said earlier, you have to be solving a problem that is a problem that needs a solution, or in many cases, just a better solution. So what's interesting when I spend my days in female health is these aren't new problems. It's not like women just started menstruating. It's not like women just started experiencing challenges with desire or having trouble getting pregnant. These are existing problems that tens of millions of women experience every year, year after year. And the focus now is, are there better ways to skin this cat? Are there better ways to deliver a solution that is more palatable, easier to use, more appealing, less invasive? Use whatever adjective you want, but that is better on one or more dimensions for solving these problems.
Great. Let's move the conversation back to getting started up. Rachel, as a female entrepreneur, how do you create a good strategy for your business?
I think you have to start with what problem are you trying to solve? Many businesses start with solving problems that aren't problems. But I'll give a very particular example of one that everybody knows about. Everybody talks about Warby Parker, and I think it's a particularly good example because it wasn't as if before Warby Parker was launched, people couldn't get glasses. I think I saw that both of you wear glasses. Before Warby Parker, I do believe that you were able to go through a process where you got a prescription and you got your prescription filled and you could wear glasses. So it wasn't as if you had identified the problem as I need to get glasses and created a business around that, something as unique as Warby Parker might not have happened. What I find you need to do in this space is figure out, is there a different way to articulate the insight or the problem that you're solving? So for instance, in the case of Warby Parker, although I've never worked with them, you know, okay, I play a lot of different roles. Maybe I want to have a way to express my personality with my glasses. I don't want to wait in line as long. I don't want to pay as much. When you put all those things together, they've created an entirely different infrastructure to achieve the same goal, which is getting glasses. But every step on the experience is different. So I encourage entrepreneurs to really look at where in the process can you make an improvement? Where can you get to a better result? Where can technology provide opportunities that didn't exist before? So take something like ovulation test kits. Those have been around for a while. What some of the new apps have been able to do is figure out a way to do what they call extend the fertility window. So now women can measure more days in the month more accurately when they are fertile if they're trying to get pregnant. Now that's a function of technology, that's a function of scientific knowledge. Again, the same problem, but a different, better solution that people would be have demonstrated their willingness to pay for. So I always start with the problem that you're trying to solve and what might you know about the user that suggests some opportunity for improvement.
Well, that's a really good nugget to bring out. One, two, people get so confused on strategy and they get analysis paralysis, but start with the problem you're trying to solve and keep your strategy simple and start the beachhead from there. Great point. You know, a woman running a business has to juggle a lot of balls in the air. Rachel, let's end our discussion with female entrepreneurs and having it all. You know, how do you have it all?
You know, the short and maybe disappointing answer is you never do all at the same time. And you've heard the expression, you can have it all, but not all at the same time. My expression is I try to keep the wheels on the wagon. And some days I can't even find the wagon. So I encourage people to, one, have a sense of humor about it. Two, know that every day is not going to work. It's just not. Some days you will drop every ball and you won't be doing what you're supposed to be doing. But that you shouldn't judge yourself on an A+ all the time. I try to tell myself and I tell other people that there will be different stages in your life where the demands of your family or the demands of your children or the demands of your job or your partner or your home will be different. So you have to really sort of stay on the balls of your feet to be able to respond. It can be incredibly exhausting. And my number one tip is just, you know, never lose your sense of humor because it can get discouraging. You know, I always, for me, work-family balance is when you literally have to be playing both roles at the same time. For me personally, I say, I can manage being a mom and I can manage working, but at that moment when I have to be both, when I have to be two places, when I have to be at a meeting and I have a commitment with my family, when I have to be flying to California for one meeting and I have something else that's keeping me back in New York. Those are the moments where I really think you need to take a deep breath, not beat yourself up and say, having it all doesn't mean every day feels great, that every minute feels great. Just be prepared that there are peaks and valleys. And then I think when you take out that element of shock and surprise and horror when something goes wrong and you have more of a sense of expectation that things can and will go wrong and you'll come up with a way to get out of it, that to me feels more manageable than I'm going to perform here and as soon as I drop here, all bets are off and I don't know how to get out of this hole.
Yeah, sometimes the joke I heard is if work and family are equally mad at you, then you're keeping it all
exactly. that's perfect. If you're failing at everything, then you must be on to something. Well,
they're equally mad at you.
Well, Rachel, Braun, Cheryl, this has been a great discussion on succeeding as a vagipreneur and female business leader. Do you have any final points you would like to share with our audience?
I wanted to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this, because one of my primary goals in being in this space is to make it comfortable for people to have the conversation about women's sexuality in all its complexities. And I hope people take a look at the book, Orgasmic Leadership. It's available on Amazon, and I'd love to hear from people to see what they think. And if they have stories of orgasmic leadership that they're pursuing or problems they would like an entrepreneur to try to solve.
Rachel, Cheryl, thank you for being such a great guest on the Home Business Podcast.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yes, you too. Thank you. To learn more about Rachel Braun Cheryl and her book, Orgasmic Leadership, visit www.sparksolutionsforgrowth.com or our podcast website for more information on guests.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Home Business Podcast. Share your feedback with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and at our website, homebusinessmag.com.
Visit the website for information on advertising. Subscribe free to our newsletter. Please visit our sponsors. For more information, visit homebusinessmag.com or the Home Business Expo at homebusinessexpo.com.
I'm Richard Captain Anderson saying anchors away.
And I'm Sherilyn Colleen. We'll talk with you soon. Until then,
make it a great home-based biz day.